Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Joining us now here on Birds 365 from Pro Football Network. Give him a follow at IC_draft. Ian, welcome to the show, man. How you doing on this Thursday morning?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be back. It's been quite a while, but we're in the lead up to the NFL draft now, less than 50 days away. And man, this class is very exciting. Diving into it again, you know, so many storylines, so many positions that have a lot of talent, and I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Good to see you, Ian.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too.
Draft season. Yeah, incoming season, I like to call it. One of the best in the business, so it's glad to have you back. But, I'm not as excited. Now, I know you're a draft guy, so I look at this draft, and we all do. People like me who just do it from the standpoint of, all right, the season ends, and for the Eagles here locally, it was so late. I feel behind the eight ball, you know, trying to get caught up. Obviously, it's not a splashy draft from a quarterback's perspective, but did get to talk to Daniel Jeremiah. He admitted it's not the splashiest draft at the top, but he called it a starter's draft. If you want to find a bunch of good players who can be starters in this league, this is your draft. Is that sort of how you phrase it? Maybe not the splash at the top, but good, solid players?
Yeah, and by the way, I the humble brag is not lost on me. Oh, we're the Eagles. We won the Super Bowl, so we can
off the draft cycle a little bit. I don't care. It makes life more difficult for me. I'm not an Eagles fan, but it does, you know, I what I'm trying to say is I'm not excited as you about this draft, and I think part of it is because I'm behind where I usually am in the prep for it.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point about, you know, what type of class it is one of those classes where last year we had Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, yeah. Brock Bowers. We had all of that star power. Marvin Harrison Jr., the big three at wide receiver, too. We had all of that star power last year. So to compare last year to this year, I think it's pretty clear that there's a juxtaposition there where there's not that type of star power in this class. That's not to say there aren't phenomenal prospects. I've been diving into it again. I'm hoping to start my final rankings next week, and I'll get more new valuations on guys. And players like Armand Mambu from Missouri tested out of this world at the combine. He graded very high for me on my initial viewing. So, you know, a lot of guys that I think are under the radar, not a ton of star power, some good prospects, though. And one lens that I like to look through the NFL draft at is, you know, you can put a great prospect in the perfect situation, and he can become an elite player, right? I look at Zach Bond for the Eagles, who just got re-signed to a massive deal. Yep. When he came out, people were looking at him like, we don't know where he's going to play. He's kind of a tweener. Yeah. He's undersized, but he's mainly an edge. And he entered the perfect situation for him with Vic Fangio. And he became an all-pro, one of the best linebackers in the game, right? So you can have a prospect who's viewed by consensus as, you know, a day two guy, even an early day three guy, right? But all it takes is the proper situation, the proper mindset, and they can reach their potential. So there's plenty of variance in the outcomes. So I always try to keep an open mind.
That's a great way to look at it, Ian. Ian, John just asked about the overall draft. What position groups, as you look at this thing right now, what are the deepest position groups in your opinion? And then conversely, what are the weakest position groups where, you know, teams might have to reach if they want to go that route?
Yeah, for sure. I think the running back class, a lot has been advertised about that class, and I think it definitely it's up there as one of the deepest position groups. Ashton Jeanty at the top, obviously. Amarian Hampton from North Carolina tested very well, and he had some great 2024 tape. But even going farther down the board, you know, I know guys like Quinshon Judkins, Travion Henderson, the Ohio State duo. You got Devin Neal from Kansas, who's a great player. Bashul Tootin ran really well at the NFL Combine, and I'm sure there's plenty more that I'm forgetting. DJ Giddens is one who's been very good. So that's a very deep class and a lot of talent in that group. And I know the Eagles are, you know, set right now, obviously, with Saquon Barkley. And I think they're losing Kenneth Gainwell potentially in free agency. So there is the potential to maybe get a guy in day three. But if you want a guy in that range, this class has the depth to get done. The safety class is pretty good too. I think the safety class is a little underrated. The corner class is pretty good too. I know the Eagles just released Darius Slay as well. So maybe looking to add a zone corner in that scheme. I think there are a lot of options, especially on day two. You could get some value there. Those position groups stand out to me as some of the deepest ones. Some of the weakest ones, I think linebacker is up there. I think linebacker, you have a couple guys at the top who are kind of hybrid pass rushing specialists, right? But they can cover as well. Jahad Campbell from Alabama is a great example. Jalen Walker, I look at him as more of a rush linebacker at the next level, but a great player again. Carson Schwesinger out of UCLA. But after that, that position group thins out. So I think looking at the Eagles, re-signing Zach Bond was obviously the right call, looking at his fit within the defense and what he's already done, because you're leaving it up to uncertainty if you rely on this linebacker class. Aside from that, the DT class is pretty good. I think the depth kind of peters out as you get farther down the board. The edge class is pretty strong. I would say the receiver class is kind of similar to the DT class. A few guys at the top, but not quite as much star power as last year's. Enough depth to get by. And then obviously the QB class is a little underwhelming at the top, but some guys who could intrigue.
I'm glad you brought up the linebackers there, because Campbell's the guy I wanted to ask you about. Because personally, I look at him and I say, you know, most people seem to be looking at him as an off-ball linebacker. I kind of look at him and see a little bit, I don't want to compare to the players, but a little bit of Micah Parsons from the standpoint of when I looked at that draft, I said, this guy's a pass rusher. All right, he doesn't have the arm length you want as a pass rusher, but he's just a natural. And everybody's talking about off-ball linebacker, and they drafted him as an off-ball linebacker, and all of a sudden, injuries, he gets a chance, and boom, he takes off. I'm not saying that's going to be Campbell, but I think Alabama moved him because of Will Anderson and Dallas Turner. That's it. I mean, he would have been playing the edge. What do you see him as?
Yeah, they always have an abundance of talent at Alabama, so they got to move guys around. You know, it's just the nature of the game. I think with Jahad Campbell, I still look at him as an off-ball linebacker personally, but I think, because the thing with Micah Parsons is that he came out, he played edge rusher in high school. I mean, he had an inbuilt history at the position, played off-ball at Penn State, and then they moved him back to edge rusher in the NFL. But he had a history there, and I think he was a little bit more built to play that position too. You know, I think he's a little more rocked up than Campbell is in terms of, you know, the compact mass and his frame.
Yeah, I don't want to compare him as players, but I just think the philosophy, I look at the player, and I don't see, you know, with Bond, you mentioned Zach Bond. When Vic got a look, the Eagles actually signed Zach Bond to be a backup edge rusher and they thought he was going to be a tremendous special teams player, as he had been in New Orleans. And Bick got a look at him and said, I think he's got the instincts to play off ball. Mm-hmm. That's my concern with Campbell. I'm like, I just think he's a guy who goes straight ahead. I don't think he's got Zach Bond level instincts.
Yeah, I think with him, the big thing for Campbell was that, you know, I think he can cover. You know, you see him drop back. I think he's one of those guys who can drop into that middle zone. He's shown that he can adjust his hip leverage based on route, route relations and where guys are, and if they're working across face, he can run with them and things like that. And then when he's rushing downhill, I think he's at his best when he's rushing the passer, right? When he's attacking, getting an angle on tackles and using that explosion, that speed, that bend to really dip underneath the arc and kind of reduce that surface area. He's got that ability for sure. And to your point as well, I agree. I think the weakness right now is his two down game. You know, when he has to read blocks in the run game, when he has to sift through congestion, right? Those are areas where you can see some of the inconsistency come up with him. So I would still have him as an off-ball linebacker, but I think in today's NFL, right, you need to be really creative with that second level grouping, right? Because, you know, what the quarterbacks are seeing, if you can disguise looks, if you can kind of, you know, deceive them pre-snap, that's a big weapon for your defense. And I think Jahad Campbell is the perfect player to do that, because he's a guy who you can line up as an edge rusher, and then he can drop into coverage. He's got the range and the leverage awareness and the landmark awareness to do that, where he can get depth and then kind of use his athleticism to match guys in space, whether it be a tight end or a big slot wide receiver. Like, he's got that athleticism to do that. But then at the same time too, he can rush from depth, and he's got the explosion and the speed and the bend to do that. So I think in terms of having a weapon at off-ball linebacker, kind of that hybrid weapon who can do whatever you want in the attacking phase, he's very good as that prospect. But I do agree. I think that where he needs to improve, where he stands to improve, is holding up in the two-down game, whether it's, you know, reading blocks and disengaging, or just, you know, sifting through congestion.
Sounds like a versatile player. We'll see where he ends up going. Ian, I want to ask you about edge rushers. Eagles are obviously picking down at 32. A lot of guys that look pretty good. I mean, a lot of guys that are very highly rated in that class. Who do you see as a guy that might be available at 32? You know, I don't want to ask about Abdul Carter. He's going to be gone in the top five. But who are some guys you think could be available down there in that first round? Because I have a feeling that's the way the Eagles are going to go. We'll obviously see. But who are some edge rushers you like that might be available late in round one that would fit the Eagles scheme?
Yeah, for sure. And the tricky part with the Eagles is that they have two guys at edge who are scheduled to be free agents, Josh Sweat and Brandon Graham. So you kind of have two archetypes that you're potentially looking at. You're looking at that athletic pass rushing specialist who can rush from seven tech and wide nine. And then you're looking at kind of the burlier, stockier, more well-leveraged player who can rush from seven tech, but can also play face up at strong side five tech defensive end, Brandon Graham. So, you know, I think whatever you're looking for, you got to see where the valuation is at 32 overall. And I think there are a few guys that kind of fit multiple archetypes for them. If you're looking for that bigger guy who can do a little bit of both, Mykal Williams from Georgia, I don't know if he'll last that far. But I do know that the one thing I do know is that we don't know what's going to happen, right? You know, there are always guys who drop farther than you expect. And I think Mykal Williams, especially with, you know, the risers that we're seeing after the NFL Combine, Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M is rocketing upwards because of his athletic showing. But I think Mykal Williams is honestly a more complete prospect on tape right now. And then he brings a lot of the similar boons with his size, his length, his explosiveness, his hip fluidity, right? He's a player who, you know, you can use him on stunts and looping rushes, and his hips are always aligned where they need to be to exert maximum power. That's one of my favorite things about him. But then he can play five tech. He's a phenomenal run defender, and I think he is showing progress with his pass rush plan. So if Mykal Williams is there at 32, I think he's a tremendous fit. I think Nick Scorton from Texas A&M is another player who could be a really good fit. I think he measured in around 6'3", I want to say 250, 260 at the NFL Combine. So he's another pretty well-leveraged, burly dude. You know, he's got the point of attack strength that you want in run defense, but he's also surprisingly finessed with his game. He can win with spin moves. He's got a pretty nuanced arsenal when it comes to double swipes and cross chops. The big thing for him is the bend is not super, it's not quantifiably elite, right? Which is kind of what you would expect with a guy who's as muscle bound as he is. He can't always sink and reduce his surface area the way the other guys can. But I think Nick Scorton definitely has appeal there. If we're talking about more athletic guys who can rush from space, Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College is really good. I like him a lot too, man. The thing that pops up with me for him is that he's got the natural leverage at 6'2". He's pretty rocked up at 250, and he's got over 34-inch arms. So having that kind of length with that well-leveraged frame, because in the trenches, it's a battle of leverage. The low man usually wins, right? So he can get low. He can get underneath tackles, cause them to lurch, and he can use that length to deconstruct, get around the arc, and he's got the bend and the burst to do that too. I think he can be a pass rush cheat code at the next level, and I think the Eagles would really like to have him on the edge. Mike Green from Marshall is another one. I can't speak to the character issues. I know we've heard rumors of that off the field. That's something that each team will have to do their due diligence on, but he's another player who has that speed, that burst, that bend to win from wider alignments. And when Marshall played Ohio State this past season, he proved that he could compete against top end talent. So he's another one that kind of stands out within that lens. And there are a few more names that pop off in that range. Princely Umanmielen from Ole Miss is one that I've liked for a long time. I know he's not perfect. I think he has some work to do with consistency even now as a fifth-year senior, but you know, he's a player who's got the talent. The farther you get down the board, the thinner the options become. But if the Eagles can come away with one of those guys, I think they'd be sitting pretty.
Let me ask you about one name I love just to follow up on edge rushers. I like Landon Jackson out of Arkansas. I think he's that bigger guy, but I like some of the traits he has. How do you see that player?
Yeah, he's very unique because he has the size where you would expect him to be able to play like some interior alignments, like 4i, 5 tech,
right.
Even.
He's big.
He's a big dude. He doesn't have elite proportional length. That's the thing with me. So there are some times, I think especially in run defense, when he's not able to get downhill where his pad level can become an issue, and then he can get outreached by tackles too. And I still think play strength is an issue as well. Coming out of 2023, you know, you could see that he had the size and the length, but the play strength wasn't quite up to par with where you wanted him to be. But for his size, he's pretty explosive. I think he's really bendy and flexible. That's the thing that gets me with him. You know, for a guy who's 6'6", 6'7", like he can get around the arc, he can reduce, he can pinch those pursuit angles, and he can get around tackles pretty easily, you know, while sustaining his acceleration. So, you know, when he flashes, the flashes are really, really intriguing because he's got the hand usage too. You know, he has a pretty deep arsenal of moves. He's still fleshing it out, still adding that hand strength. But for me, it's just, can you work past the pad level, right? Because sometimes that is going to be an issue with taller guys. Naturally, they'll pop up too high. And then without elite proportional length, that's another thing that he's going to run right into against NFL tackles. So I think if you get him in that 5-tech, 7-tech role, I think he could be a really good player, but he's got to continue to add play strength to reach his maximum potential.
You mentioned Stewart a little bit there and his performance at the combine. So he was a guy I thought maybe he could, because there wasn't a ton of production at Texas A&M. Maybe he could fall to the Eagles, but that's off the board, the way he performed. A guy who's supposed to go highly that didn't perform well, at least in some instances, when you look at the explosion, was James Pierce. What did you think of his performance? Because there was a potential top 10 pick at one point, certainly top 15, 20. And now all of a sudden everybody looked at him at the combine and said the explosive numbers weren't great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's one of those things where the combine for me, you know, we go back to how much stock you do put into the combine, right? Obviously, it's an important event for verification and things like that. But on the tape, he's very explosive. I think that's one of his chief calling cards. So, you know, I'm going to defer to the tape whenever we see that. But when a guy doesn't test very well, or not as well as you would expect at the combine, I think one thing that you can look at is preparation too. And again, you know, you don't want to make total inferences off of this, but, you know, when a guy doesn't perform well, like it can be just as much preparation as talent, because these drills, you have to rehearse and practice the technique, right? You know, for the 40-yard dash, you got to make sure you don't false start. You know, you got to make sure that you're distributing your weight properly, right? You know, with the vertical, for instance, like you got to make sure that you're distributing your weight into the jump and things like that. So a lot of little details that I think really, really give you a lens into the preparation behind the scenes, just as much as the talent, you know, on stage. And there was one, you know, my draft colleague, Corey Kinnon, wrote an article and said that there were some whispers about character issues, potentially work ethic with James Pierce, maybe not being as coachable as other guys. And so, you know, I do think that teams have to do their due diligence there, especially when you're spending such a high pick with him, because he's got the talent. I mean, that shows up on film. You know, he's got the length, he's got the explosive ability on the vertical plane. The bend isn't quite elite for me. There are times where he can't always get his hips underneath tackles, but, you know, he's got the explosion and the power profile. All those things are there. It's just a matter of, you know, is the underwhelming NFL combine performance kind of a foretelling of things to come? Is this a guy who's not going to be able to reach a ceiling because he's not putting in the preparation? Obviously, it's a big assumption to make off of an NFL combine performance, but, you know, I also don't want to skirt around how much preparation does matter for these drills. So if I was putting him up against some of these other first round edge prospects, it would be something, it wouldn't concern me. It would definitely, I'd want to look into it more.
Makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense completely. Talk to me about the 32 pick and like the disparity, because I've heard some people say there's not that much of a difference between like the 15th or the 20th player in the draft versus the 50th player in the draft. So if Howie were want to move up or move down, where are they sitting in terms of value at the 32 overall pick? How easy would it be for them to move up and down? I know it would obviously takes two teams to tango, but how big of a difference is there between that 15th and 50th prospect, let's say, based on where the Eagles stand now?
Yeah, no, I think, and I'll have to come back to this once I do final grades, because I'm still getting into it with the tape watching process after coming back to the role. But when I came into it and, you know, coming back to it, catching up a little bit this week, my gut feeling has always been that, you know, maybe 10 to 15 blue chip guys in this class. And then once you get past that, it does trickle down a little bit, but there's a pretty vast tier two of guys where you get to like 15 all the way down to like 60, 64, you know, potentially. So if you're the Eagles, I think they're in a unique spot because, again, the roster, they just won a Super Bowl, right? The roster is still sitting pretty good. You know, we know they can coach guys up too. So if you wanted to be really aggressive for a player who's fallen down the board, who fits your scheme really well, right? You could do that if you wanted to trade up into the top 16 or so, the top half. It's going to take a lot, top 20, but, you know, you could be aggressive if you wanted to. But even trading down, you know, I think for the Eagles as well, that's a situation where you trade down from 32. I think you could get some comparable value in the day two range. So for me personally, I always like to, it's tough because, you know, I don't want to answer with ambiguity, but you got to see how the board plays because there's a very good chance, you know, we see players fall all the time. You know, if there is a guy, a blue chip guy, you know, a guy that you've circled on your board who's there at 32, you should take him. And once you get into that 20, 30 range, even as early as 15 to 20, that's where the variance of each team's board starts to come into play, right?
Yeah,
because each team has a guy graded differently. Each team has different cultural fits for their evaluation too. So once that variance comes into play, we see some really off the wall results. We see that every year, right? So I think for the Eagles, they're in a great position. We've seen that, you know, everyone talks about the Chiefs doing this too, just playing the board and getting a great player, you know, because the board, you know, always hits you with those curveballs. I think the Eagles are in a position to benefit this year too, whether it's trading up or trading down. I think Howie Roseman has proven that he can be versatile there, and I think that's exactly what it needs to be.
If they do trade down, it's generally, you don't have to go back too far. The last time the Eagles won the Super Bowl was the 2018 draft, and that was the Lamar Jackson draft, and the Eagles traded out of 32 because Baltimore wisely wanted to go up and get that 50-year option with Lamar Jackson. I don't see that quarterback, that type of quarterback that somebody's going to want to leap up to the back of the first round to get. Is there that potential of that player in your mind?
In my opinion, no. I think, but again, you know, every team's evaluation is different. I will say there are two guys who could potentially fit that definition because all it takes is one team, you know. Well, I shouldn't say that. All it takes is two teams, right? It takes one team and then it takes competition because if you're one team who falls in love with a guy and you know that another team is in love too, you got to beat them out, right? So it takes two teams. But once you have two teams that are interested, that's when the price can start to get driven up for some of those guys who are in that second tier of QBs. I think Jalen Milroe is one who could fit that definition. Again, he's still pretty raw on the technical side. He needs to improve a few things, whether it be, you know, field vision, his mechanics are still a work in progress, although he has shown some development there over the course of the offseason. But he's a hyper elite physical talent. I mean, he's an incredible athlete. He's got a rocket for an arm. And by all accounts, he's very coachable. He's a great leader. He's a great worker. So all it takes is one team or two teams to fall in love with him. And then Jalen Milroe could be that guy at 32. If a team wants to lock down that fifth year option, we've heard a little bit of buzz about Jackson Dart from Ole Miss too, kind of being within that lens. Another guy who's very athletic, has enough arm talent.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Questions about the pro style translatability of that Ole Miss offense. But again, you know, the scarcity at QB sometimes can drive the price up for those tier two QBs. It doesn't always, right? You know, we think back to the Kenny Pickett class, right? Only one QB in the first round. And then there was a gap and then a few guys in round three. And we know how that class aged. Brock Purdy ended up being the best one of the bunch. So, you know, it's not always the case. The QB position isn't always inflated by default, but I think there is a chance that you get a couple of those guys who could potentially command value at 32 if they were to.
And I want to ask you about offensive linemen now, because it's always a good bet. If you don't know where the Eagles are going to go, just bet that they'll go in the trenches. Yeah. Who are some offensive linemen you like in this draft? You know, obviously, Mekhi Becton is the free agent right now on that offensive line. We'll see if they end up bringing him back. But if he does get crazy money in the open market, you know, I look at a guy like Tyler Booker from Alabama. Maybe he's a guy they could go. Who are some offensive line prospects you like and you could see the Eagles being interested in?
Yeah, I think the Eagles are in a good spot at 32 because, again, I think offensive line, when we were going through the positional overviews earlier, I neglected to mention offensive line, but I do really like the top of this offensive line class. I think you have a lot of diverse prospects. I think you have guys who can play tackle or guard. I think you have guys who you can transition and move around, and they have the traits that you want to mold. Tyler Booker is a fun one for the Eagles because, as we've seen with the Eagles, they're not always – married to, I mean, obviously, I think in general, Howie Roseman likes to draft athletes, right? You know, that's a pretty standard, you know, correlation with him. But when it comes to the offensive line, sometimes we know Landon Dickerson, when he came out, you know, he was a good athlete. I don't think anyone billed him as an elite athlete. There were some injury issues too, but he's a bruiser. He's a mauler in the trenches, man. He sets the tone. And I think looking at a guy like Tyler Booker, I think his functional athleticism is more than good enough, especially for his size. If he's going to be playing at around 330 pounds, he's never going to be a guy who's going to cover an insane amount of ground as a pulling blocker, as a lead blocker, right? He's not that type of athlete. But for what you need him to do in a phone booth, moving laterally, matching pass rushers, right, keeping them within his center of gravity, keeping them within his reach, and just using that hand strength and that, you know, combative hand motion to win those one-on-one battles, I think Tyler Booker makes a lot of sense schematically for what they do. I would say Kelvin Banks Jr. from Texas is another one if he falls to 32, which some mock drafts we have seen him falling a little bit. So again, he could be a guy who gets filtered out, gets to 32, and he played tackle at Texas, but I think he could be a really good fit at guard. He's a little high-hipped, a little stiff in the midsection too, which that's a reason that you see guys move to guard sometimes, because they don't quite have the transition freedom to match the most athletic edge rushers. Right. But Kelvin Banks Jr., man, he's another mauler. He's very physical. He will bury you in the dirt if you give him the chance. He's got pretty good short area explosion. I think his proportional length is very good too, and he's got a low center of gravity, so he can win the leverage battle that you want. And those are a few guys that stand out. Donovan Jackson from Ohio State is another one I like a lot. He's a fun player because he shifted to left tackle when Josh Simmons went out down the stretch of this year, and he actually had just as good a left tackle tape as he had guard tape. So he's a fun player, but at guard especially, again, you talk about natural leverage, proportional length, combative hand motion, athleticism. Donovan Jackson has all of those things in spades. And then one more guy that I'll bring up is Gray Zabel from North Dakota State. Yeah. He's got to improve his play strength a little bit. He's a little bit lighter, but explosive, super physical. I mean, you want a tone setter, he will give you that. And he's got great leverage acquisition, great flexibility where he can kind of absorb power and then redirect it mid-play. So another fun player that I would like a lot to fit a guard. But ultimately, for the Eagles, I think you have a ton of options at that range. And that's another position where you could feasibly trade back and maybe get a guy like Jonah Savainaya from Arizona in the middle of the round, or Tate Ratledge from Georgia, another great player. So there are options in the interior line. I think the Philadelphia Eagles can play the board, see what happens.
I'm going to tell you who the Eagles pick is going to be, Ian Cummings. Okay. And I want you to tell me why it's a good pick, and I want you to tell me why it's a bad pick. And,
I got you.
Obviously, this isn't going to happen, but it's my early beat. If they lose Milton Williams in free agency, and if he falls, a lot of ifs, I think Walter Nolan, the Ole Miss defensive tackle, I think he's that guy at 32. They say, you know what? We don't want to trade down. We're just going to take him if he falls there. Good, bad, indifference on Walter Nolan.
I think at 32, I do like the value. He's a guy who's kind of, I imagine he'll file in that 30s range for me as a prospect, kind of just outside the round one barrier. Looking at his 2024 tape, obviously, it was his most productive year yet. I think he had 6.5 sacks, 14.5 tackles for loss. He was an All-American, 6'4", 295, 32.5-inch arms. So he's definitely got that power profile that you want. He is as explosive as anyone in this DT class. He's got enough proportional length to channel that explosion into power. And you think about what the Eagles like at three tech, I think he fits it to a T, right? Athletic guys who can drive power, who have that innate, that inbuilt athletic upside to mold. Walter Nolan definitely fits that to a T, right? So I think getting him in that locker room with those veterans, I think it would be a great situation for him. I think it's kind of a situation where at 32, the value lines up, and then I like the fit as well. So I still think there's room to improve his game. He's another guy who's a little stiff in the hips, and you kind of see that, especially in run defense, right? When he gets caught with combo blocks or double teams, he'll drift upright with his pads pretty easily. And then from there on out, it can be a little difficult to, you know, maintain the line, you know, avoid displacement. And then, you know, when they can win the trench battle, that's when running backs can start to gash you up, right? So I think run defense, leverage and run defense can still improve for him. But when you look at his pass rush ability, this guy can rush from three tech, four eye, five tech. He can just straight, he's a battering ram when he gets going, man. He's so powerful. And then he actually improved his pass rush plan a little bit this year. We're seeing more, you know, in 2023, he was just a battering ram. I mean, he would only rush straight ahead. He would blast through with his power. And if that didn't work, his counter game was not very strong at all. This year, you saw him rush across face a little bit, use swipes and rips. And I think that's a great development to see from a guy this talented. So at 32, I love the fit. I love the value. And I think it's a great replacement for Milton Williams if he wants.
All right. Ian Cummings. I got the thumbs up for Ian Cummings. Yes, sir. I like that.
I like Walter Nolan. We'll see how it shakes out. Ian, before you go, I do want to ask you about just kind of the general top of the board. I know it probably won't pertain to the Eagles, but I'm interested in your thoughts on that. But I do want to ask you this question from one of our great viewers, Bob Brown. Ian, he says, ask Ian, who is this year's Jalix Hunt, the kid from a nowhere school who could shock everybody? I think that's a good question. Any guys from the smaller schools you picked up on yet, Ian?
Oh, man, this is a tough one because I'm still getting into the swing of things since coming back to the role.
I figured that because, you know, the small schools take a backseat to the top.
Come back to me in a couple weeks or a few weeks next time I'm on. A couple guys that I like in the day three range that I'll throw out there. Tyler Barron at Miami. He was at Tennessee for a few years and they transferred to Miami. He's a player who, you know, we talked about the archetypes for the Eagles needing that five tech strong side defensive end or a guy who can rush from seven tech and wide nine. Tyler Barron is a guy who can do all of those things, in my opinion. He when he was playing at Tennessee, he was around 6'5", 260. And they were rushing him at three tech because, again, he was so powerful. He was like a Lucas Van Ness type. But then he goes to Miami and he's showing bend. He's showing hand usage along with that explosion in size. So if you can get him on day three, he might sneak into day two. But if you can get him on day three, I like Tyler Barron a lot. And then another guy, these aren't small schools, so I apologize. I will do the homework on that for next time.
Just getting back into it. Yeah.
But Braden Swinson, LSU, is another one. He was a really highly touted recruit coming to Oregon when he initially went to Oregon. Then things didn't work out there. He didn't really get a ton of playing time. He transferred to LSU, and then he broke out this year, man. I mean, he was super productive. I think he had 7 sacks, 14 tackles for loss. Another guy who's around 6'3", over 250, I think close to over 33-inch arms, maybe close to 34, but explosive. He's got great bend. He's not quite as strong and powerful as a Tyler Barron type, but if you need a guy who can rush from 7 and 9 and just get around the apex and, you know, use that explosion to terrorize QBs, I really like Braden Swinson, and I think he deserves a little more love in this class. So a couple edge guys that stand out to me there.
Yeah. At IC_draft, make sure you follow Ian on the X platform. Does a tremendous job. ProFootballNetwork.com. One of the best draft guys is in the business. As you can tell, he knows his stuff. I wonder, Anthony Belton, because offensive tackle, North Carolina State, mentioned he's already got a top 30 visit lined up with the Eagles. That, you know, people overrate that kind of stuff. But I look at that player and I say, all right, that's their Mekhi Becton contingency. I think they're going to move him inside. He's got this huge body. What do you think of him as a prospect, where he'd kind of land?
Yeah, and he's one I have to refresh a little bit on, but from my evaluation before the season, because he was a starter at NC State for a long time, I think three or four years. So
he was a tackle.
So I think around 6'6", 330 at least. I mean, his nickname is Escalade, so he's a big dude. He carries a lot of
mass. Nickname. That's a good nickname.
It's a right good there. Nickname, man. I can see the Eagles fan base getting behind that right away. But he's strong, powerful, you know, all the things that you would expect with that frame. But then for his frame too, I don't think he plays too tall. I think he's got good knee bend. I think he's got pretty good weight distribution when it comes to, you know, staying within his center of gravity and using that power and strength. The thing for me is, like, athletically, again, I don't think you're getting an elite mover inside. I don't think he has elite range as a puller or things like that. So you might, you know, if you shift him inside, you know, might be a little limited in terms of scheme variety. But again, if you're looking for a guy who's big, powerful, strong, heavy hands, and then, you know, if you keep him in a phone booth, he'll do what you need him to do. I think Anthony Belton makes a lot of sense. He might be available on day three. It's going to be really interesting to see where the middle of this offensive line class shakes out, because I could see a lot of there are a lot of guys who could sneak into day two, right? Or could move back a little bit. It just depends on where teams see them. But I think he could be a great value get. And we know the Eagles, they know how to coach offensive linemen up. That's the biggest thing with them, right? You know, it's not always a case of, you know, needing to invest in round one, because if you see a guy with the proper talent, the proper mindset later on, you know, they can make them who they, you know, can be potentially with enough development. So I like the idea of seeking out those value deals. And I think Belton's a great option.
Yeah, and you look at that left side of that offensive line. Landon Dickerson was a second-round draft pick. Cam Jurgens was a second-round draft pick. And Jordan Mailata, obviously, a seventh-round draft pick. Last question for me, Ian. How do you see this top 10 playing? I know it doesn't pertain to the Eagles, but just a general draft question. I've seen Abdul Carter. I've seen Cam Ward. I've seen Travis Hunter. How do you kind of think that shakes out with those teams at the top? Because there is some quarterback-needy teams there, but there's also some really special prospects with Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter. How do you see that shaking out?
Yeah, you know, there's QB needy teams. There's not a ton of QBs, and there are a lot of really good prospects, non-QB prospects at the top, like you said. So I think one of those QBs is probably, if I had to bet, I would say one of them does go number one overall, just because you have so many QB needy teams in the top 10. You've got the Titans, who are, we've heard they're looking to trade out, right? So, you know, the Giants or the Browns could trade into number one to get, I think it would be Cam Ward if it was going to be anybody.
Yeah, I agree.
I think his throwing talent is just, you know, it's separated in this class. You have a lot of guys who are good, who are decent. And then Cam Ward as a creator, as a thrower, just his arm elasticity, his creation capacity is elite. It truly is. So I think that separates him at the top. I would see one of Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter going top three as well. I think Armand Bambou, I mentioned him earlier from Missouri. Yeah. I think he could surprise some people with how high he goes. I could see him going as early as number four to the Patriots.
Wow.
And then I think once you get to number 8, 9, 10, I don't see him dropping out of the top 10. Looking at his tape, Armand Bambou is just so talented. And then he's low to the ground. He's got proportional length. He's athletic. But then his tape is really clean too. You know, really good footwork, really good hand usage. And he's a pretty instinctive, aware player in the running game too. So I like his tape very much. He might be my OL1 when it's all said and done. And I could see him going as high as four. The wide receiver position will be interesting. I could see Tet McMillan going as high as the Jets potentially, right? And then maybe the Saints at number nine. But I could see him slipping a bit too, because he didn't test. I know for guys with his kind of size, there is always the concern of, you know, just how athletic is he? How proficient as an independent separator is he? So could Matthew Golden surpass him as a top receiver? I don't know. If I had to break down by position,
you could run past him. I know that.
Yeah, exactly. You could run past him for sure. So that's something there. Yeah. But if I had to break down the top 10 by position, I would lean at least one QB. Maybe Shedeur Sanders breaks in, but I don't see anything elite about him as a prospect physically. And even, you know, even on the operational side, there are some concerns. I think he's accurate. I think he's a good processor, but is he the kind of guy who can elevate your team? I still don't know, right? So we don't know how teams are going to value him.
I'm with you, Ian. If he falls by Las Vegas, I think you could see the Aaron Rodgers like draft drop on draft night. Do you think he could fall in the second round?
I don't think he could fall in the second round. I think there's enough QB needy teams. We talked about the 32 scenario, right? Someone trading back in. I think Shedeur is a prospect where if he were to fall that far, I think someone would jump in.
32, baby. Howie will take advantage and trade out. Somebody will pick up.
I still think it's unlikely, but I think he might fall quite a bit if he gets past the Raiders.
And he's another one I'm really eager to do a final eval on him, because again, you know, we've seen it's the media trend. Every time something like this happens where you don't have a really dense class at the top with QBs, someone's value is going to get inflated in these mock drafts, right? And I'm not saying Shedeur Sanders is a bad prospect. I really loved his accuracy, his touch. I think there is some creative ability and talent there for sure. But again, physically, I don't think he's anything more than above average as a creator and an arm guy. And then even as a processor, right? You know, not a ton of NFL level reads in that offense, a lot of line of scrimmage work, right? So is there anything that screams top five pick to me? I'm not so sure, right? So it depends on a lot of variables, right? But I do think his range is a lot wider than most.
Good stuff. Ian Cummings from Pro Football Network covering the draft again at IC_draft. Make sure you give him a follow. Ian, thanks so much for joining the show today, man. Great to catch up with you again. We look forward to talking to you again before the NFL draft. All right, brother?
Yes, sir. Thanks, Xander. Thanks, John. Appreciate you guys.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Ian.
Great stuff there from Ian Cummings breaking down the NFL draft. That's as good of a breakdown as you'll get here as it stands on March 6th. So I love the way Ian talks about prospects, John. He really gets
into it. I know.
You know, he's super thorough and he really gets into, you know, the strengths and the weaknesses and where they can improve and you know, fits for teams. It's pretty impressive the way he breaks down prospects.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. As far as I'm concerned, he's one of the best in the business. And I'm glad he's back. I'm glad it's draft season. I call it Ian Cummings season because we've had him on for a number of years. Nobody breaks down prospects better than Ian. I truly believe that. Even on the national level, you'll see the big guys on it. They don't break it down as well as Ian does.
Yeah, he does, and he makes it consumable for people to understand what he's saying. Really good stuff from Ian Cummings, and we'll have a bunch more draft guys on. Obviously, as we lead up, you heard Ian say it, less than 50 days until the NFL draft, and I know people are saying now they're not as excited for the draft. I'll talk to you when we're 20 days out. You'll be all jacked up for the NFL draft. So we'll get Rick Saratella back on, hopefully, on the show. Remember Matt Manicharian, John. I want to talk to Matt Manicharian. He does great work from Sports Info Solutions. He did good stuff. So we'll get all of our draft guys back on here on Birds 365 through the offseason. But pretty good stuff there and, you know, pretty good prospects. I think the Eagles, you know, the one thing about this class, John, is at least – it seems to me that they're going to have a lot of options, whether they want to go up, down. I mean, there's always that with the draft, but sometimes
yeah, I can't imagine them going up.
You never
know with Howie, and Ian's right. It only takes one player to fall. And you like, and you know, there's always surprises on NFL draft day. Cause I think these narratives get sunk in and there's a lot of, there's a lot of copycat, you know, draft guys that just, you know, all right, this is what Jeremiah says, so I'm gonna lean to what Jeremiah says, or you know, Mike Mayock back in the day, and there's a lot of confirmation bias, and all of a sudden somebody drafts, you know, Bill Belichick was famous for occasionally drafting somebody. What, that guy's not a first round pick? Well, he is to the New England Patriots. And always, you know, teams don't pay attention to your favorite draft Nick, even Ian Cummings. They're doing their own homework, and that's why I have these types of surprises. And that's one guy, like I mentioned that, Shedeur Sanders, you know, dropping quite a bit. I think he might drop quite a bit. Talking to people around the NFL. Down.
He doesn't really see anything super elite about Shedeur. I kind of feel the same way. I don't know. Is he getting gassed up because of, you know, the name and the family and everything?
Well,
like
yeah, part of it's the family. Part of it's the name. Part of it's that there's a lack of quarterbacks. And, you know, after Cam Ward, who are you going to go with? And the thought that teams are going to be desperate. And usually they are, but sometimes they aren't. And you don't have to go back too far to the Kenny Pickett draft where everybody said, all right, nobody's good enough, so we're not going to take him. And maybe they go out and sign Sam Darnold because they don't believe in, you know, the Raiders. What if the Raiders go out and sign Sam Darnold in free agency, they're not taking him.
And that's a better move, I think.
Well, certainly better player right now, but, you know, you probably have to pay him $40 million.
Yeah, I know. Do you want to compete or do you want to be in nothing land?
Well, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, all these things. And that's why free agency has such a big impact on the draft. So, you know, typically you can throw any mock draft, including mine. I'm not picking on anybody, but you can throw any mock draft into the trash the minute you read it. It's meaningless. It's useless. It's an exercise in futility. But when I say that, and I say that all the time, it's even more so before that first wave of free agency. Because if you're like, I just joked, and it was, I hope people realize it was a joke that I'm locking Walter Nolan in.
Yeah.
I think it's a possible.
Still probably have to say it though, John.
Yeah, I know, sadly. But, you know, if the Eagles go out and sign somebody or re-sign Milton Williams, well, then I'm taking Walter away.
Right.
You know, that's how quickly things change in the NFL.
Yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out in the NFL draft. Should be pretty good, the prep to that, and obviously even closer to NFL free agency, just 6 days away. Next Wednesday, it'll kick off, and, you know, we had two straight days of football 24/7. Will we have a third? John's not ready to say no, and neither am I. Maybe Mekhi Becton coming down the pipeline. But, John, a bunch of stuff to talk about after the commercial break here. We'll get to that commercial break. Now we got a super chat. Apparently some C.J. Gardner-Johnson stuff Alexander Harris wants to talk about, so I'll get to that super chat. And I want to talk about a couple of other things here for this Philadelphia Eagles offseason and what they have planned and what's coming in the pipeline. So we'll do all that next on Birds 365. Before we get to the break, I want to tell you guys about the great people at BetUS. Go and check them out now. It's BetUS.com. Use that promo code YouTube150. It gives you 150% sign-up bonus on your first deposit. You get 125% on your second and third deposit, all up to $2,000. So deposit less and bet with more at BetUS. Go get your March Madness bets in. Go get your Eagles futures bets in. Maybe bet on who the Eagles are taking in round one. Whatever you can do on BetUS. Go and check them out today and use that promo code. And a big thanks to them for sponsoring the show today. We'll be right back in 3 minutes on Birds 365.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.